So a number of years ago, I was mid-Wales. Yes, again, it's a walkie story. Those of you that know me know that I love my walking, I love my mountains. I was in mid-Wales. There's a beautiful mountain there called Cadair Idris. Seriously, if you ever get the chance, walk Cadair Idris. It's absolutely beautiful. It means the seat of Arthur, apparently. Gorgeous mountain. I was up there by myself. I was actually kind of training at the time for mountain leadership. And so I got to this mountain and kind of wandered up there by myself. And as I was coming down, I met a group coming the other way. And there's a little bit of etiquette here in that if there's a solo person and a large group coming the other direction, is that the large group kind of generally let the solo person go over a stile first. And we came to a stile, a fence. And rudely, in my opinion, they all went over in front of me. A bunch of young people, and they all turned and then started walking along the fence line going down the path. The last guy, though, paused, looked me up and down, said, "Come on over." So I got over the stile, and he looked at me again. He said, "Out in leadership?" I went, "Yeah, how do you know?" He said, "Oh," he said, "I was doing it myself a year or so ago." He said, "Just recognising the kind of kit you're carrying and such like." He said, "Yeah, I've qualified now. I'm working for an outdoor pursuits company." He said, "Yeah, my job now is taking students up in the hills." He said, "You know, this bunch up there." He said, "Right nightmare they are." He said, "They think they know absolutely everything, won't listen to me whatsoever, won't follow instructions." He said, "I've got them for the whole day." I said, "All right." I said, "Where are you taking them?" He said, "Oh, we're going up Cadair Idris." I thought, that's a bit strange. I looked at the group of students walking off down the path in the distance. Looked back at this guy. I went, "Cadair Idris?" He went, "Yeah." I went, "Yeah, but Cadair Idris is that way." He went, "I know that. You know that. I'll give them another 5 minutes before I turn them round." Sometimes guidance is really, really important. Yeah? As people, we look to have someone to guide us. It was great hearing Simon do the children's talk earlier, and not knowing what that was going to be, but hearing him talk about guidance as well. Really great, because that fits in exactly with what we're looking at this morning. Because guidance is really important. And as believers, as Christians, we come before God and we say, "Look, I want to be guided by you. I want you to lead my life. I want to follow you." But I don't know about you, but I find that really hard. I find that really difficult at times to understand where God is wanting to take me, what God is saying to me through his word. I think it would have been a lot easier maybe, you know, in the time of Samuel. We're working through his book here. And obviously when Samuel needed guidance, we know at the beginning of his life, God actually speaks to him by name. And we think, as believers, wouldn't it be great if God actually did that? But he doesn't, does he? He doesn't. And actually, if you look through the Bible, the moments when God speaks individually to a person is really rare. Instead, God works in different ways to bring guidance to those that follow him. And this passage has a lot about guidance in it. We've got two characters here. We've got Jonathan and Saul, father and son. Both of them seeking to understand God's will. But they approach it in very different ways. And as a result, there are very, very different results. So what we're going to do this morning is that classic English comprehension thing, where you were given a passage and they went, "Compare and contrast." Some of you are remembering that now, yes. Compare and contrast. Two characters, Saul and Jonathan. What we're going to do is compare and contrast Saul and Jonathan and see how they were guided and how they listened to God. So again, let's just put a little bit of context in here, which Jonathan has helpfully filled in already. Saul has been crowned king. He's the king of Israel. That was done by Samuel, although he and Samuel have now had a falling out. Israel is being oppressed by the Philistines. Okay, so these are the people living along the coastal region. They were meant to have been pushed out by the Israelites when the Israelites took the promised land, but weren't. And the Philistines are oppressing them. The Philistines have a technological advantage in war. They have iron. which the Israelites don't have. And that is a big advantage when you're fighting with swords, with iron swords against bronze swords and bronze weapons. Saul, however, has raised up an army. The Philistines have responded. Both armies have marched together. There is evidently a big gulf in between them, mentioned by the two cliffs that we see there. And both armies are sitting there camped out, working out how to get the advantage on the other one. And so, at the beginning of this chapter, Jonathan decides to go on a two-man raiding party against the Philistines. One day, it's chapter 14, verse 1. Please turn to this in your Bibles. One day, Jonathan, son of Saul, said to his young armor-bearer, "Come, let's go over to the Philistine outpost on the other side." What I love straight away about this passage, and this is not about guidance so much, but just a nice little observation. What I really like about this passage, the younger generation take action. I can see all the young people going, "Yes, finally." It is though, isn't it? Come on, it's the younger people that take action in this one. Now, don't get me wrong. You go through the Bible, there is an awful lot in the Bible about respecting older generation. And I'm very keen on those bits because I'm now older generation myself. Okay? But when you look through the Bible, there's bits like this. "Is not wisdom found among the aged?" I like to think so. Maybe not. "Stand up in the presence of the aged." And then, of course, the classic in the Ten Commandments. "Honor your father and mother." The only commandment that's actually got a promise attached to it. There's an awful lot in the Bible about honoring the older generation. And maybe as a result, there's an expectation that the older generation should always be taking the lead. That the older generation should always be the one saying, "This is what we should be doing," and things like that. But that's not the case biblically. Because in the Bible, we quite often see the younger generation taking a lead. And David, the youngest of his brothers, picked out. We're going to be coming to him as we go through, but he's the youngest there. There's a wonderful bit in the New Testament. Paul has a companion, a guy called Timothy. And Timothy is so useful that generally Paul will send Timothy to other churches and go, "Timothy, can you go and sort out the problems in this church?" Because he's so good at what he does. But he's young. And when he gets to these churches, it's evident that there's older generations there going, "Well, it's just a young whippersnapper." Sorry, for the younger generation, that's a phrase. I've no idea where it came from, but whippersnapper is one from my generation. "He's just a young whippersnapper. What does he know?" And Paul actually writes to Timothy at one point and he says, "Don't let anyone look down on you because you're young. Don't let people look down on you because you're young." See, the wonderful thing is here is that Jonathan takes the initiative. Saul is just sitting underneath a tree, trying to work out what to do. Jonathan says, "We're going to do something." See, the problem, and I have to say, as we get a little bit older, we get a bit more cautious. I was chatting to a friend of mine the other day. We were talking about cycling, as I do with my friends quite a bit. And he said, "Jez," he said, "can I ask you a question?" He said, when you're going fast down a hill, do you ever worry about the front wheel falling off your bike?" And I went, "You know what, it's a funny thing, but I do these days." Yeah, I do. When I'm going fast down a hill on my bike, I worry about the front wheel falling off. Now, I've never had a front wheel fall off my bike, and I don't know anybody else who's had the front wheel fall off their bike. But as an older bloke, I now worry about it and think, yeah, if I crash now, this would really, really hurt. But when I was a teenager, I never worried about that. I never worried about it. I never thought, what if this all goes wrong? And the trouble is as we get older, we tend to get a little more cautious about trying things out. We've got mortgages, jobs, we've got all these things that we worry about. We say, "I've got to make sure that that's all going on," and so we tend to be a bit more reticent about trying things. We tend to be a bit more cynical as well as we get older. "Yeah, it's a great idea, you know, but I tried that back in 1972 and it didn't work then." We just tend to be a bit more cynical about things. And you know what? It's great to see the younger people challenging that attitude. So I've sat in church meetings here where we've been discussing something and one of the young people has said, Can I just say something? Isn't it like this? And it's been a real challenge because the young people approach it with just a different view and go, why can't we just do that? And the tendency seems to be, as old people, we tend to do, well, there's good reasons behind that, but actually it's great that the young people just challenge on that, that they speak out. It's a great role that young believers have. And I encourage you not to stop. Have the courage to speak out and call it as you see it. And when, unfortunately, if people turn around to you and say, yeah, but you're young, you just go, so was Jonathan. So was Jonathan. He was young as well. Now, don't get me wrong. I have to say, young people, you're not always right. Okay? Occasionally, you will be wrong. And it's nice when you work with the older generation who sometimes have a bit more wisdom and have seen it and been there. But don't lose that courage that you have as young people to try stuff out that we as an older generation are scared to do. Remain as Jonathans, who just go like this one. Verse 1, come. Saul and the rest of the army might be sitting over there, plucking up courage and wondering what to do, but come. Let's go over to the Philistine outpost on the other side. Have the courage to act. A wonderful thing when the younger generation take action. Okay, let's get into guidance. Okay, and I've said that there's a number of things in here about guidance. And the great thing is when we look at Jonathan, it's really quite simple. There's three ways that Jonathan seeks guidance from God. That he wants to understand that what he's about to do is the right thing to be doing. He's made this decision. I think I should be going over there and attacking this Philistine outpost. How do I know that's right, God? And there's three things that Jonathan does, which are really simple and for us, really applicable. So number one is this. Doing what God has commanded. I told you before, the Philistines weren't meant to be there. You see, when the Israelites took the land, the promised land, this bit of land that the Philistines are on was given to the Israelites. They said, that's part of your inheritance and you are meant to drive them out. What actually happened is, as they got further and further into the promised land, more and more people wanted to stop fighting because actually, do you know what? I've already got my bit of land. We've already captured my stuff. I'm quite happy. And so the last lot of Israelites who were meant to be taking this bit had no support whatsoever and were not able to take this. And the Israelites failed to work together under God to take this bit of land. But that is land that God has given the Israelites. And so what Jonathan is doing is obeying God's command. The land was given to the Israelites. Jonathan is following God's command. He knows that God has said, this land is for the Israelites. He says, right, we're going to go over there. Jonathan wants to understand God's will. And part of that is knowing what God has commanded and following that. You see, when we seek to understand what God would have us do, he's not going to ask us to do something that contravenes his commands. This is God's word, the Bible. He says, this is how you should live. This is how you should be doing things. He's not going to turn around and then start contradicting that. God says, these are the things that you should be doing. I'll give you an example. Jesus is asked to sum up the whole of the Old Testament law. And he does it very succinctly in two phrases. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And somebody turns around and says, who is my neighbor? And he tells the parable of the Good Samaritan to explain that actually your neighbour is everybody around you. And the application that Jesus gives is that you must show love to others. On the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus turns around and says it's not enough that you say, oh, I haven't killed anybody. Jesus says you mustn't hate, because that's just as bad. So Jesus turns around and says, look, you must love and not hate. So you're seeking guidance from God. I'm in a difficult situation with another person. Is the way that you're going to act towards them hateful? Because God doesn't ask you to hate. Is what you're going to be doing to them a hateful thing? God doesn't ask you to do that. Not to say that you don't disagree with them. That's fine. You can disagree with them, but you disagree in love because God is not going to ask you to hate them. And you will not find guidance from God that says, yeah, go out and hate. God's not going to ask you to do something that is not part of his word. So the first thing we need to do is, we want to understand God's will, is turn to our Bibles. And read our Bibles and know our Bibles really well. When somebody says, I want to understand what God is saying to me in my life, fine, the first question is, are you reading your Bible? Are you studying God's word? Are you going to a Bible study? And spending time reading it? And trying to understand it? Because that's the first way we understand what God is saying to us. We seek guidance, and God is going to say, is it in my word? Okay, number two. Jonathan said to his young armor bearer, come, let's go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised men. Perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving. Note that Jonathan there has recognized that God is saving his people, okay, by driving out the Philistines. Whether by many or by few, do all that you have in mind, his armor bearer said. Go ahead. I'm with you heart and soul. What does Jonathan do? He asks another believer. He asks another believer. Okay? In this case, he actually asks his armor bearer. We have the idea that maybe his armor bearer is a bit like a Sherpa. Yeah? You know, there's Jonathan striding on, going, come, come to battle. And his armor bearer is kind of like a Sherpa with a huge, great weight on his back, going, ugh, wait a second, Jonathan, I'm just getting there. No. His armor bearer, though younger than him, would have been a military man as well, and a fighter. Okay? Effectively, a better analogy would be his armor bearer was his wingman. The two of them went into fight together, and you'll see that actually they worked together as a team, that Jonathan would go ahead, yeah, and those that Jonathan didn't manage to kill, his armor bearer would be dealing with as he came behind him. The two fought together. His armor bearer knew exactly what was going on when Jonathan turned around and said, 10-1 odds, against us, what do you reckon? And his armor bearer said, go ahead, I'm with you heart and soul. See, Jonathan asks his armor bearer, he asks another believer, what should I be doing? How should I be acting? See, exactly the same is true for us, isn't it? We're trying to understand what God is saying to us is ask other believers. Talk with them. You know, we have membership meetings here where we gather together as believers and we discuss where we think God is taking us as a church. And that is a discussion that we have because we discuss it with other believers. Now, our casual conversations are situations where we can say, look, I'm thinking about this. Do you think that's right? There is a lot of guidance that comes over coffee after the service when people will sit down and discuss their plans. Be able to say, do you think God is saying this to me? Some of it is deliberate discussions, though. You know, where it's situations where you say, look, I've got a situation. I just don't know how to deal with this. Can I sit down with you as a fellow believer and talk it through and discuss that through with you? Maybe from Bible studies, you go along to a Bible study and that passage just speaks to you as it's explained to you. And you go, oh, right, actually, do you know what? That's really, really helpful because of the situation I find myself in at the moment. You know, even, it may even be that God speaks to you through a sermon. You ever had that situation where you go along to hear a talk and it seems as though the person speaking is speaking just to you? I've had it. And I know that other people have had it because they've said, that sermon was for me. In fact, have you ever had even better, those ones where you have like a month and God's obviously deciding that you're not getting the message properly because every sermon, every Bible study and every reading that you get seems to be saying exactly the same thing? God's speaking to you. God speaks to you through other believers. And when we want to challenge what we're doing and when we want to understand God's will, part of that is turning to other believers and saying, could you pray with me about this? Can I ask your opinion? You're a fellow Christian. What should I be doing in this situation? How do I deal with this? It's part of the reason we have a fellowship here. We should use that fellowship and talk with other believers. That, of course, means that
some of us may be asked to help others. If we're asked to help another believer, we need to take that seriously. A tendency, somebody comes to you and says, look, I've got this situation. Can I ask you, as a Christian, what should I do about that? And maybe your first reaction is, come to me. The right person to come to. There's that little pride that just comes in straight away. Yes, you've come to ask my advice. But actually, it's really serious when somebody comes to ask our opinion as a Christian. What do we think about a certain situation? We need to take that seriously. That means not just giving them an off-pat answer that you came up with in the 5 minutes on the top of your head. It means sitting down and praying it through. In fact, the first thing you should do with that person is say, great, I love that. Can I pray with you about it? So that we can understand God's will. It means directing them to God's word. It means maybe going away and doing some reading up. But taking it seriously. If a Christian believer comes to you as another Christian and says, I need to understand what God is saying in this situation, we take that really seriously. Okay. So number two was ask another believer. What's number three? Knocking on doors. Odd phrase. You're thinking there's no door in here at all. Jonathan doesn't knock on a door. In fact, what Jonathan does is climb a cliff. Now, I have to say, I really like that I was given this passage, obviously, with my love of climbing. I really enjoyed this one. I had visions of what that must have looked like as Jonathan scaled that cliff. Maybe something like this. I think his armor bearer would have had a few words to say as well, but no, possibly not like that. It does say he used his hands and feet, but I'm convinced it wasn't quite like that. Okay, knocking on doors. What do I mean by that? What I mean is this, that Jonathan asks for a simple sign. Have a look down here. Verse 8. Jonathan said, come on then, this is to his armor bearer, we'll cross over toward them and let them see us. If they say to us, wait there until we come to you, we'll stay where we are and not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, we'll climb up, because that will be our sign that the Lord has given them into our hands. So both of them showed themselves to the Philistine outpost. Look, said the Philistines, the Hebrews are crawling out of the holes they've been hiding in. The men of the outpost shouted to Jonathan and his armor bearer, come up to us and we'll teach you a lesson. So Jonathan said to his armor bearer, climb up after me. The Lord has given them into the hand of Israel. Jonathan asked for a sign. He says, if they lean over the parapet of their outpost and say, come on up, that will be a sign that the Lord is in what we're doing, that he is telling us to go there. And so they do that. They climb up and they defeat them, and we find out later on Jonathan and his armor bearer killed some 20 men, as I said, 10 to 1 odds. Why? Because they were brilliant soldiers? No, because they knew that God was on their side, because God had answered their sign. Now, straight away, I'm going to sound a note of caution. We have to be really careful about asking God for signs. And everything comes down to saying, right, if God gives me a sign, that will be that will give me a guidance on what I should be doing. When I was growing up, there was a great book, a fictional book, called The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole. Okay, some of you may have read it. It was a fictional diary written by this author about Adrian Mole, and it was kind of like the trials and problems of being a 13-year-old lad at school, and written as this humorous fictional diary. It was picked up by a Christian writer who used the same idea and wrote The Sacred Diary of Adrian Plass, age 39 and three quarters, about a middle-aged man as a believer and the struggles and troubles that he had as a Christian. It was very funny, but it was also really good as a little teaching aid of how to live as a Christian. I remember there was one wonderful bit in it where Adrian has accepted an invitation to sing in the church choir at Christmas. They were going to be singing in the precinct, much like we do, and he'd accepted that he was going to be part of that choir because they really needed him. He then found out that there was a really good James Bond film on that night that he really wanted to see because he hadn't seen it yet. And he was stuck in a bit of a dilemma because he'd already accepted the choir. He knew that that was something that he should be doing, but he really, really wanted to watch this film on telly. And so he prayed for guidance. And he asked for God to send him a sign. And as he writes it in his diary, he says this: if a midget in a Japanese admiral's uniform came to the door at 9:04 precisely, I would know that God wanted me to sing carols. Strangely, that doesn't happen. However, Adrian decides not to do the carols, but his minister then turns up concerned because he knew he'd promised, and he spends the rest of the night talking about his problems with his minister and doesn't get to see the film either. God teaching Adrian a lesson there. But that's the danger when we ask for signs, is effectively we ask for a sign that backs up what we want to do. Okay? And that's certainly not what the Bible is saying. See, I think when we're looking at signs, we're talking more about knocking on doors. It's an expression that we use an awful lot as Christians. We say, I'm going to knock on a door and see if God opens that door. We can still proceed and we want to see where God leads us. Paul does this an awful lot when he's moving around, going from town to town. There doesn't seem to be some wonderful plan that says, right, I'm going to go here, 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 and here. It seems as though Paul effectively knocks on doors and says, God, I think I should be going to this town next. If it's right, allow me to go there. Interesting enough, there's one place where Paul tries to go, a place called Bithynia. And he writes, or at least Luke writes, in the book of Acts, and he says, we tried to go into this area, Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus wouldn't allow us to do that. God effectively said, no, that's not right, and blocked them. And so Paul worked very much on the basis of, I will try it, and if God opens that door, if God allows me to go there, then I will treat that as God saying, yes, that's correct. Interesting enough, for Paul, being stoned and left for dead didn't count as a closed door. As far as Paul was concerned, persecution was not a reason to say God's closing that door. He said, no, opposition doesn't mean it's wrong. God will make it clear if he wants to close a door. It's something that we as Christians do a lot. We try things and we see if God is going to take us there. My sister, my youngest sister, works for a church up in Cambridge. And she applied for a role there. She wasn't sure about this. I remember she emailed the rest of us as a family and said, look, this role has come up. I'm not sure if God is leading me here. Could you please all pray for me? Which we were doing. And we prayed for her. Continued to do so. She applied for the job and she says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to knock on doors and see what God does. And so she applied for the job. And she was given an interview. And she said, okay, that's God opening one door, but that doesn't mean to say it's right. And then she got the interview, she went up, and the interview seemed to go okay. And in fact, they offered her the job. But she still said, I'm not sure whether that's God opening the door for me. You see, the thing is if God had closed that door, my sister wouldn't have been upset. She wouldn't have gone into that whole kind of like, oh, that's terrible, that's awful, they rejected me. It would simply be God saying, no, that's not right for you at this time. And that was the acceptance that she had of that. And so actually she said, well, I will need to have somewhere, a home up here in Cambridgeshire. And so therefore, God, you know, that's really going to be a bit of a struggle for me. If that happens, then I know that you really want me to be here. And that happened very simply and very easily. She was provided with a home up there. In fact, able to buy one up there that just came on the market at just the right time, in just the right place, for just the right amount. And she was able to do that. She said, that's God opening doors. And the danger comes that sometimes, like Saul, we sit back in camp, worried about moving. And we have to proceed and see where God will lead us. And when God closes doors, not get all frustrated and go, oh, that's terrible, that's a rejection. It's God saying, no, that's not right for you at this time. So three simple lessons on guidance there. Okay, number one, God will not ask you to do something that goes against his laws. Number two is we can ask other believers. And number three is, yeah, we need to sometimes just knock on doors and just see if God is going to lead us there. And very briefly, I want to just look at the flip side of that and just want to look at Saul, because Saul also seeks guidance from God, but it goes horribly, horribly wrong. Okay, beware, Saul gets it horribly wrong. What does he do wrong? Number one is he surrounds himself with the wrong people. Don't ask people who will just agree with you. Interestingly, verse 3. And verses 2 and 3, Saul was staying on the outskirts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree in Migron. With him were about 600 men, among whom were Ahijah, wearing an ephod, that's someone who would seek God's guidance. He was the son of Ichabod's brother, Ahitub, son of Phinehas, son of Eli. We've already come across the sons of Eli. We know that they're not following God very well at all. In fact, God has rejected them. Okay? Ichabod, the person mentioned there, his name literally means no glory. Named because at a time when it was felt that God's glory had left Israel. This is the person that's advising Saul. Why? Because Samuel's not doing it. Because he's broken that relationship with Samuel. And so Saul surrounds himself with people that will probably agree with him. And the danger comes is that we say, yeah, let's go and ask other believers for guidance, but I'm only going to ask those believers for guidance who I know actually share my viewpoint. Sometimes as Christians, we actually need to go and ask other people who may not share our view as well, but we know that they are strong believers with God's best interests at heart. We go and talk with them and say, look, you're a strong believer. You and I may not see eye to eye on this, but I'd like to know your views because I want to know what God is saying. I'm actually seeking out people that may have a different view. So be patient for God's answer. There's this wonderful bit in verses 18 and 19. Effectively, the Philistine army are thrown into panic. Saul says to Ahijah, bring the Ark of God. At that time, it was with the Israelites, and while Saul was talking to the priest, so he's about to consult God and understand what they should be doing. He's saying, right, this is what we should be, let's ask God and find out what should be done. While Saul was talking to the priest, the tumult in the Philistine camp increased more and more, so Saul said to the priest, withdraw your hand. Don't worry about it. We'll handle it ourselves, says Saul. I was going to ask of God, but I don't need to because I'll do it myself. Be patient. Wait for God's answer. Read his word. Talk to other believers. Knock on doors, but wait for God to answer. And then thirdly, there's this whole thing about honey. Jonathan said to me, you're not going to do the honey bit, are you? We just stop it there. And I said, no, you've got to do the honey bit. Yeah, it's important. The honey bit is actually really important because what's happening there is Saul makes a really rash decision that has a massive effect upon God's people. Makes a really rash decision. Okay? They make rash decisions. And the point behind it is actually this rash decision that Saul has made hasn't come from God at all. It sounds like it. It sounds like one of those, yes, the Lord allowed us to defeat an enemy when we were half starved. But God didn't ask for it at all. Look at this. Verse 24. Now the Israelites were in distress that day because Saul had bound the people under an oath, saying, cursed be anyone who eats food before evening comes, before I have avenged myself on my enemies. It's Saul. If they beat them and they're half starved, who will that glorify? God? Saul has claimed all of that for himself. He said, effectively, I'm going to hamstring the army before we even start. Because when we win, I'll look fantastic. And we know what happens. The army are starved and they're struggling to keep up with the Philistines who are running away faster than they can keep up. There's this wonderful moment as they go into the woods. Jonathan, clearly a military man. Okay, did you notice that one? As he runs through the woods and they're pursuing the Philistines, he sees some honey and it's oozing on the ground. Does he reach out his hand to scoop it up? Does he stop? No, he just gets his rod, his staff, and he just dabs it in the honey so he can eat as he's running. That's a real military bit there. And then there's this whole issue of them, and the Israelites, as they come to the end of the day, they're so hungry because they've been starved that effectively they just start cutting up the animals and eating them raw. Because they're so hungry because of what Saul has done. And then there comes this whole issue about who has sinned against God. Who has sinned against God? And the irony being here that it's David who has been guided by God. And the other Israelites recognize that. They're the ones. And he gets singled out. Sorry, not David. Jonathan. Got the wrong one there. Thank you. Jonathan. Who has been guided by God, who's been listening to what God says. And the Israelites see that. And they're saying, you're not going to put Jonathan to death. You can't kill Jonathan, for he did this today with God's help. Jonathan is the one who has been following God. You think, we're not going to do rash decisions that glorify ourselves when they don't work. We're not that stupid, but you know what? We are that stupid. As Christian believers, how many times do we go, I'm not going to do enough work on this or preparation because it's all right, God will just jump in and save the day. And unfortunately, that is an attitude we see. When we go through difficult times, we don't look at how we're acting ourselves and the effect that that's got. I always remember a story, my friend Kevin Wood, he was telling me about his university Christian Union. And they had a whole prayer meeting late in the evening because they were under attack. They all felt under attack. They knew they felt under attack because they were exhausted all the time, fractious with each other and everything like that. And so they prayed late into the night about how they felt under attack. And finally, one of them said to Kevin, you know, you're very quiet. What do you feel about all of this, Kevin? And he said, to be absolutely honest, if you went to bed at a reasonable hour, you wouldn't feel so under attack. See, the trouble is that sometimes we don't help ourselves. We just go, that's all right. God will solve all of these things, when God is actually turning around and saying, get some sleep. Do your preparation. Get things planned out beforehand. Don't make rash decisions where you hamstring everything that's going to be going on. So that if it actually does work, it's going to glorify you rather than me. Because that's exactly what Saul does. Okay. Summarise that. Be challenged by young believers. If you're older generation, and I include myself there, okay, be challenged by young believers who come to us and say, why can't we just? And recognise that as older believers, at times we're a little reticent to do things. Young believers, be encouraged. Challenge us. But recognise that sometimes the older generation do have some wisdom as well. Do what God commands. Read His Word. God is not going to ask you to do something that goes against what is written down in the Bible. Okay? So the first point when you're trying to understand God's guidance is go back to His Word. Ask other believers for advice, and if you're asked for advice, take it seriously. And then finally, don't be afraid to step out in faith and see where God leads you. And make sure that whatever you do, those decisions that we make when we ask for God for guidance, whatever we do, that should be glorifying God and bringing honour to His name. Amen. So we're going to close by singing a hymn that talks about God guiding us and leading us. And could have gone for Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. But in fact, I love the idea of this one, from the breaking of the dawn to the setting of the sun. I'll stand on every promise of your word. Going back to God's word. But later on, as you'll see in the verses here, it talks about God guiding us as well. Let's stand together and sing.